Hey everyone, this is James Mackey and welcome to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. Join us as we cover high-level thought leadership and step-by-step guides on how to make people a competitive advantage for your organization. I'm incredibly proud to be the CEO of Secure Vision, the sponsor of this show and the number one contract recruiting, embedded recruiting, and RPO firm. A thank you to our partners, Greenhouse, the hiring operating system for people-first companies, and GEM, the all-in-one hiring solution recruiters love. Let's go! Hello and welcome to Talent Acquisition Trends and Strategy. I'm your host, James Mackey, and today we are joined by Brent Davis. Brent, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, James. Glad to be here, man.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm really excited to just talk all things talent acquisition with you today. Before we jump into it, could you please just tell us a little bit about yourself so all of our guests know your point of impact and where your perspective is coming from?
Yeah, so I'm actually fairly, I guess 6 years now, but fairly new to TA. I got an MBA from Southern Utah University and then went right into banking, spent 10 years at a pretty reputable and a good, strong, regional bank down in Southern Utah, built a large portfolio in hospitality and, thought I was going to retire there. In the process of my career with the bank, in commercial banking, I got to know the Levitt family personally, and an opportunity 6 years ago came up to come work for them. And honestly, because of the respect I had for their family, the company that they had, good people they are, it was quite literally a no-brainer to come over and work with them. And it was doing something it was talent acquisition. And so I came over here and we started this department, talent acquisition focused on salespeople. Exclusively, no other jobs but our salespeople. And for 6 years, we've been putting the pieces together and we'll get into specifics, but it's been highly successful, highly profitable, and still growing. So that's a little about me.
Yeah, that's great. It's Levitt. Am I saying that right?
Levitt. Yeah. Cool. Levitt.
Cool. Cool. And now, can you tell us now? It's an insurance company. They are currently. Are you guys currently around 900 employees? Is that right?
Oh no. We're probably closer to 2,600.
2,600. Okay, cool. Because I was looking off LinkedIn, so there's actually a lot more.
Yeah.
Nice. Yep. Okay, 2,600. So that's also good context for us to know as well. So obviously, a lot of organizations, regardless of what stage of growth they're in, from early stage to mature organizations that have been around for a while, hiring sales talent is a pretty consistent need across the board. I would love to just learn some of the top lessons that you've kind of experienced over the past 6 years hiring salespeople. And I guess there's a million ways we could dive into this, but what's top of mind when it comes to hiring top sales talent from a talent acquisition perspective? How do you approach that?
Yeah, let me give you some really quick background on Levitt Group. We've got a unique business model where we don't own exclusively our there's about 90 agencies. Some have one location, some have, the largest has 17. And then annual revenue varies as well. And we don't own exclusively those agencies. They're all set up as separate corporations. Levitt Group typically owns 60 to 70% of each one of those agencies. And then there's the remaining 30 to 40% is owned by a co-owner or a co-ownership group. Keeping it really simple, we believe that equity, shared equity, is a good aligner of interests. And so we don't need to micromanage them. They come with their strengths, sales, relationships in their communities, and then we come with the back end support. And so it's important for you to understand that, because I'd say maybe 10, 15 years ago, Levitt Group primarily grew via acquisition and affiliation. Just let's go out and buy an agency. And a gentleman by the name of Billy Bond, actually, he's retired now, but a great guy, one of my great mentors. He came to Levitt Group and says, listen, we're leaving a lot on the table here. We need a sales culture. And so and part of that, building out that sales culture, was to build a recruiting team and start going after people that could help us grow organically, not just through acquisition.
Okay.
So that's the getting to your question, that was the top of mind goal when we started building this.
Gotcha. So what's just kind of circling back to talent acquisition, like what lessons learned from hiring sales talent? Like, has the strategy been relatively consistent since this initiative kicked off, or have you seen it work better implementing any changes, or like what's kind of been the evolution over the past 6 years?
Yeah, I'd say the most important thing to us from day one is hiring those people with those inherent sales skills. And we break it down into four things. Number one is personality. Now, a lot of times people will get confused and will think, man, that guy's got a great personality. That gal's, she's super, super nice to deal with. She must be good at sales. That's wrong. Personality is only an important component of it. It's really your ability to connect to and relate to people. Attribute number two, that's the sales ability. This is their ability to get in front of decision makers and close deals. Number three, we're looking for somebody that's basically just smart enough to learn a fairly complex product and sales process. Do they have the technical aptitude to learn it? And then fourth, kind of a fun one. Call it a bunch of different things. We call it our PhD. They've got to have a PhD, which means poor, hungry, and driven. And if they've got those four, as we go through our interview process, if they've got those four things, we'll make the recommendation for hire. And then ultimately our manager will hire if they're a cultural fit.
So is this primarily entry-level sales talent? Because I know you were saying you're looking at aptitude. So is it entry-level, like people at the beginning of their careers, or is it more so people that might be changing career paths? Like what's the typical kind of experience level that you're pulling in right now?
Yeah, it's going to be all across the board. Some, you know, agencies are going to have different needs. Some people are going to need perpetuation. We've got some managers and co-owners that are getting a little, you know, long in their career. And so we'll need to find somebody to help them perpetuate. And in that case, we're going to find somebody that's a little more seasoned and possibly even in the industry. The vast majority, though, I'd say we're looking for sales professionals that have been out of college for a few years, maybe 2 to 5 at least, have been in a sales role and are maybe looking for something a little more than what they have. They've got that PhD and the attributes, and they're not being compensated the way that they feel like they're capable of being compensated.
For sure.
Insurance is a lot of money in it. And those people that are good at it can do pretty well for themselves financially.
Yeah, you know, I always felt it was harder to hire for aptitude than for like just down the pipe experience in highly relevant environments. Like, you know, particularly like when I'm working with earlier growth stage companies, like companies much smaller than Levitt Group, right? Like, yeah, Let's say 30 to 200 employees, or maybe as much as like 500 employees. Like when I'm working with companies of that size, I typically recommend go for down the pipe previous experience, because they're usually hiring less at scale, like, or they're not, it's not as much of a repeatable motion yet where they've done it just for years and years. So it's like to eliminate risk, if they're going to hire a smaller amount of people, it's almost better to just say, let's just find somebody who comes from a really relevant environment and make sure they can get references from previous direct managers just to limit risk as much as possible. But I guess like for a larger organization, that becomes less of a problem because you're hiring, again, like, you know, if you're hiring 30 salespeople, right, or something like that, it's not like you're just hiring two. And so it's, you know, you can almost play more, a little bit more of a numbers game, I suppose, which of course we don't try to do that, right? But it's like the risk isn't so high that, you know, you could just focus on the aptitude piece. But maybe I'm thinking about that wrong. Do you feel like you can hire just as good from a quality perspective hiring for aptitude as you could for experience in a relevant environment?
Yeah, I think it's a little more difficult for us just because of the nature of our product. Our clients, this is usually, and we specialize in your middle market, your middle market companies, and most of the time, this is one of the almost all the times, this is one of the largest line items on their financial statement. And so they're not going to just trust, meaning they're the client or the business owner or CEO. They're not just going to trust this part of their business to someone that's just got out of college. Right. You know, sometimes you need a little bit of gray hair, maybe some glasses, you know, you gotta be around the block a couple times. And so, finding those people with relevant experience, which is sales, right? Like we can, that's the relevant experience.
Okay.
When we've focused on, and I won't share any of my numbers, but we've actually found that finding people from a sales background rather than an insurance background, it's cheaper for us and the results are a lot better.
Well, that's a good combination.
Yeah, totally.
That's what you want.
Yeah.
So I'm interested because still like switching industries, well, I guess it depends on how similar the sales process is, right? Like if you switch industries, but it's a very similar sales cycle, like selling to mid, you know, they've been selling to mid-market companies or something like that, then I could see that being an easy transition. But do you also hire people from like a transactional sales background, selling to like SMBs or consumers? And then are you able to kind of onboard them to a mid-market environment? Like what have you seen work there?
Yeah, I'd say if they're more towards the beginning of their career, I'd say that works out a little better. If we're looking for that entry level, we've got an agency with a good sales culture and a good mentor. Maybe finding somebody from one of those more transactional sales, it could work out. But typically, no. We're finding somebody that does a type of sale that's similar in nature to ours. They're calling on CEOs and that business to business type sales already.
For sure. Okay, so that's like the experience piece. Okay, so beyond the aptitude, it's like similar sales environment is the correlate, like yeah. The thing. Okay, cool. And so I know you mentioned that you have a bit of a unique interview process. I would love to hear about that, how you optimize specifically for sales hiring. Cause I think a lot of orgs are still kind of stuck in the trap of like their process looks the same for revenue org as it does for tech, as it does for G&A. And I think the more mature organizations out there are taking a little bit more tailored approach, right? So
yeah.
I'm curious to hear more about that for what you do for sales hires.
Yeah, and I wouldn't really call it unique, but I'd say it's thorough and it's purposeful. And so one thing we want to avoid is, you know, sitting down with a candidate. I can't tell you how many times I've been called up by a department manager at our company or one of our co-owners and says, "Hey, Brent, give me a list of your interview questions." Mm-hmm. I don't have any. It's more of a process. We're not looking for, when we interview people, we're not looking for just quick data points. You know, give them a question. Do you know how to do this? Do you know how to do that? We're looking for patterns of behavior. And so when we start a search, we use probably a lot of the same tools that everybody else is using. LinkedIn is a great partner of ours. We've got some really great reps. Stephen Weiss, Derek Bellinger has been a really great partner of ours with LinkedIn. I tell you what, man, sales, if you're a salesperson, you're on LinkedIn. So they're a great partner. Zoom Info has a really good product that we like. Of course, you know, the job boards. So we'll start the process and we're just gathering names. We will in a typical area, and of course it changes per size of location, but you know, we may go over, you know, 200 to 500 resumes and profiles. And if we're able to phone screen 20 to 30, we feel like we've done pretty good there, but typically it's, you know, 15 to 20 phone screens we'll go through. The purpose of that phone screen, that's really when our interview process starts. We're just looking to see how they sell themselves and to see if they've got that, you know, we talked about that experience, those building blocks. We want to make sure they, you know, we're talking about their sales cycle. and you know who they're selling to. Very trying to keep it 15 to 30 minutes tops. Looking for building blocks and how do they sell themselves. And if they get past that level, maybe there's going to be 5 to 8 of those candidates that will move on. And then we sit down in at least a 1 hour interview. We have not involved the hiring manager at this point. It's just me and my team, me or somebody on my team. And that's really in this interview, that's really where we feel we're able to get a better sense of who that person is. Like I said, we don't ask a list of magic questions. We basically have this candidate walk us through their resume, and they typically start at college, right, and start working through. And we're looking for opportunities to ask follow-up questions with these candidates. I'll give you an example. So
yeah, I'd love to hear some of those follow-up questions that you're asking.
Yeah, I'll tell you a really easy one is when they transition from one job to the next. A common thing we'll hear from somebody is, you know, my boss and I, we didn't see eye to eye, so we mutually decided to part ways. And so many times I think when we interview, we give the person the benefit of the doubt and we just glance right through a statement like that. But that's a key time to start digging. And so it's a lot of like, what, why, how, tell me more.
Right. It's like you have to have that like 3-year-old mentality, but why, right? Like you just keep following
exactly.
up.
Yeah, exactly. Don't give them.
Right.
Don't fill in the blanks for them.
Well, one thing though, like I really think that, I mean, yes to all of that. And also like, I feel like salespeople are very guarded when they haven't hit quota. I don't really hold it against people if they haven't hit quota, because so many companies have quotas that are based off like nonsense, like actually no numbers. So it's not necessarily like they're not necessarily a bad salesperson if they haven't hit quota. Like if I was advising a startup, I would say don't risk it. But for later stage companies, like I would say you have to dig a lot deeper. For instance, like what I'm concerned a bit more about is, okay, how big was your peer group? Like how many salespeople did you work alongside? And how did you rank, right? To me, that's going to be a better indicator of success than if they have their 60% to quota or 150% to quota. Like what's the context of their team and where did they rank within that is to me like a much better indication of like their actual performance. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you're listening to how they talk about it, right? Like how confident are you talking about what you did and how you built it? And you know, how'd you hit your goals or achieve whatever ranking you had within the company?
And if they're not self-aware of like how they got results, then I'm less confident that they can replicate their success.
Right. Like, there's a million people out there that can give you the book answer. And I
hate that. Like the just very generic, like,
yeah,
you know, it's like textbook type of stuff opposed to, yeah. I don't know why people feel like that plays well. It doesn't. Right.
Yeah. Well, because they do that because they don't know, and they're just trying to sound good. They're trying to play the part in the interview. And so many times people play the part. We get into that sterile environment of an interview, interview and interviewee, and just kind of play the game, you know. And we're nice to each other, but we've got to dig deeper into things and be open. And I hope they're digging into us too. That's a good sign, is to see them ask questions. There's one fun part of this interview that we try to do. And I tell you, we have to be more careful with it on the East Coast, but we give or on the West Coast. But we tell the candidates at some point in the interview why we don't think they're a good fit for the job. There is no perfect candidate out there. And even a candidate that I love. And I know I like halfway through the interview, I made like, no, I want to make this person an offer. I'm still going to tell them why they're not good for the job. Western culture, Western U.S. culture is a little more, they're going to be offended a little more easily. We've noticed they'll stand up. It's like, well, heck with you then. And East Coast,
like Northeast
people on the East Coast. Yes. Specifically even Northeast, probably you can play these games with them a little more and they'll
punch back.
Yeah.
Like that's the culture. And like honestly,
that's what I'm looking for.
Right.
I'm looking for that punchback because And let me just give you a couple of fun little examples, if you don't mind. There was a guy that we interviewed, and he was that typical given the book answer and, hey, I've got this wonderful sales process. And man, the more and more I kept digging into it, he couldn't explain it. So I finally said, listen, like, I just don't think it exists. Basically, I don't think you can. You can't pick up the phone and grind for 4 hours, you know? And so he wound up like monologuing for about 15 minutes and then wound up like banging on the desk and got really mad at me. He's like, he says, well, I can't sell. Is that what you want to hear? What do you want to hear? But anyway, just that whole objection just brought out just this awful behavior in him. It was awesome. He wound up when we rejected him, he sent us a really nasty email with some colorful language in it too. But you know, that stuff that showed us who he was.
Right. I mean, it's funny. Like, I think some of that's like very industry specific. Like I do that, like, not like why you're not a good fit for the role, but I'm transparent with, like, hey, this is something I think we mutually need to think about. Right. Like, you know, I think this stuff is aligned. I'm not sure if we're aligned in this area, and it's like mutually beneficial for us both to like figure this out. Like, I want to see if it's a good fit for us. I also want to make sure it's a good fit for you. But I think, again, it's like some of that's industry specific with like in cultural, like, you know, of within the industry or the industries you're recruiting from, like in SaaS, like, for, you know, a lot of the stuff that we do in tech. I express it a little bit differently, but it's along those lines. And the other thing, like you touched on this, was like the whole digging into us thing, like asking questions. I think the best candidates are the ones that ask me smart questions. Like, when people get to the final round at Secure Vision to work here, like, one of my first questions is like, what questions do you have for me? Right? Like, as the business owner, like, you can ask me anything, strategy, finance, whatever, work-life culture, ramp, onboarding, vision, just whatever you want. And there's a direct correlation between the people who answer that question the best and their performance on the job. Like, I look for people that are aware enough to ask good questions. I want people that are critical about their career. Like, they're thinking, what is going to make the most sense for my next move? And if people aren't asking questions, they're just like accepting whatever's put in front of them, and they're not asking me intelligent questions and digging deep, then it's like, why aren't you? Are you just going to like accept an offer without like digging into us as a company? I mean, I find that concerning. So that's one of the ways that I make a decision when I'm hiring is like, are they asking, like, I want their questions to take up like 30 minutes of the interview. Yeah. And then for the last half, I ask questions. And, you know, my go-to, and recruiters are similar to salespeople. I think recruiting is sales personally. So we hire a bunch of recruiters, but, you know, I'll ask them like, okay, your current employer, if you're made CEO tomorrow, what are your top three initiatives? Like, what do you change? What do you double down on? What do you discontinue? Like, whatever you want, just top three initiatives. And then that's looking for like business acumen. Like, do they understand what's working in their environment and the challenges they have? And do they understand how to optimize it and make it better? So even if they're not like moving into a strategic role at Secure Vision, I want to understand how they think about things and like how they think about solutions and problems. And if they're aware enough about their environment to make recommendations on how to make it better. So that's one of my favorite questions to ask in the final round.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, I think about like what you're talking about there with just the questions that the candidate will ask. I don't care if it's top line guy or your entry level bookkeeper. If you've got a, you know, take for example, some bookkeeper that's asking a lot of questions in the interview, that communicates to me and should communicate to the managers that this is somebody that's going to ask a lot of questions in the job too. And it's somebody that I don't have to hold their hand, and they're going to make my life a lot easier in training them, because they're intuitive. They're intuitive.
That's a great word. It's like the business acumen, like part of that is being intuitive, right?
Yeah, they're taking their career seriously. They're going to take this seriously. So
it's also people that are going to grow with the company, most likely. Like, they're going to be able to level up and add more value.
Yeah. Hey, and I'll tell you what, our industry is old. If you look at the average age of a insurance professional, it's going to be in the 50s, 50, 58, maybe even higher. we're losing leaders. We need more leaders in this industry. There's tremendous opportunity here. So yeah, we're just not plugging, you know, plugging and chugging here, filling holes.
Right. I hear you, man. What's your, like, so I'm curious to learn more about your onboarding strategy, because it's like, okay, if you're pulling people from different industries, right? Relevant sales environments. So maybe they don't need that training, but they obviously need training on product, clients, ICP, you know, just like sales strategy, how to engage, differentiators, overcoming objections, you know, like what is that onboarding process looks like? Cause it must be pretty robust if you're pulling people from different industries.
Yeah. First off, our department, we try to avoid some of our agencies that struggle with mentoring. We don't have strong leadership there or a good sales culture, because mentorship is the load bearing wall of this whole thing. It's that windshield time, somebody that can come to your appointments with you. But around that, we have, it's part of the team that I'm a part. I'm a part of a larger team that is focused on, basically everything that touches sales, and big part of that, not just our incentive trips and sales competitions, but our development, led by a gal by the name of Peggy Hansen. She's phenomenal. I don't think Peggy will ever retire. She loves it. She's phenomenal at her job. And her role is really to come in and insulate those mentors, provide structure for them, and help insulate their training, make sure that these new producers have access to, that they understand the markets we work in, that they understand the tools and resources that we have, and then also provides sales mentoring. We've got a producer school out here in Utah. We fly all of our new producers in within their first 4 to 6 months, and provide some sales training that's specific to our industry. So
that was what I was,
a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that sounds good. Cause that's what I was going to kind of, as like a follow-up question, ask is like, is all of this kind of ad hoc sales training that varies greatly depending on the agency, or is it like, there's some kind of like overarching like process that is shared with all of the agencies on, this is how we sell, these are the scripts, this is the sales process, like, this is going to get you the best conversion rates. Like, how, like on an ongoing basis, how centralized is the sales training versus up to the individual agency?
Yeah, it's about as centralized as we can make it, which isn't very, it's more ad hoc, right? Mm-hmm. With insurance, there's no industry out there that it doesn't affect and doesn't touch. And you know, you've got some producers that are selling to lawyers and others that are selling to dairy farmers, and so it's a different approach, and is so diverse that what Peggy's helped to build is very customizable, and it's very, very one-on-one, very she will spend, her and her team will spend at least, they'll have one call with at least one call with every producer for 6 to 18 months, one-on-one.
Cool.
Big effort, but it's worth it. And that's why we have to be so careful with who we hire.
Yeah.
We invest so much into them. We can't play the proverbial throw the spaghetti at the wall and see who sticks.
So for like performance, is like sales performance done on an agency basis, or are there performance standards that Levy Group kind of helps put in place for the agencies? Like, this is what good looks like. Any of that?
There's definitely a standard. There is a little bit of fudging that we can do per, like, you know, per agency, per area. And I think that's important. But we do have a standard. And the goal for us is not revenue generated in the first year. It's activity. How many qualified first appointments are they able to go out on a week, or per week, right? Per month. Because if we believe that if they're generating activity, eventually those sales are going to come. We had a producer down in Houston that closed $7,000 worth of business his first year. It was terrible, but he was doing all the right things, and we stuck with him. And his next year, and this is like a dramatic example, right? This
doesn't happen
to him. So he's the one I share. His next year, he closed $245,000 worth of business.
That's great. And that's all like recurring revenue and insurance, right? So that's, yeah.
About, you're looking at probably 85 to 95% retention rate on your accounts. So
yeah,
it stays.
That's great. Is there like a net retention rate, like in terms of upsells within year two that kind of covers the attrition of that 10 to 15%? Or how does, is there a lot of upsells?
Yeah, like you're talking like staying at your book, continuing to grow.
Yeah, like, okay, you close an account for, you know, X amount of thousands and like year two, you're able to upsell to other kind of packages, I guess, or other types of
insurance. Yeah, you know, I don't know if I don't have those numbers.
Yeah.
Imagine there's a degree of that, but mostly it's just replacing accounts, right? You're out
getting
new business.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's really cool. So, you know, I guess just like to kind of speak to the current market, have you seen any change in terms of competitiveness and hiring sales talent over the past year, like maybe 6 months? Like, is it just as hard as last year? Is it getting easier? What are you kind of seeing out there as a trend for hiring salespeople?
Yeah. So yeah, what a wild couple of years we've been through.
Yeah.
I don't think that, I actually think it got easier through the pandemic, through the Great Recession, right? Great Resignation, excuse me.
Right. Yeah.
That would, heaven forbid, we don't want to go through that again. Because you saw a lot of your sub-level candidates disappear.
Right.
Your A players were still out there. And so we were weeding through less candidates.
That's cool. So,
but I'll tell you, the last maybe 3 months, and I don't have any numbers on this yet. But man, we have seen a major uptick in candidates, and
like inbound candidates that are applying, or
yeah. So I'd say last year, a majority of our hires, probably about, it's going to be close to about 75, 80% of our hires came from passive efforts, meaning we reached out to them, where I can't remember the last good applicant we had. But the last 3 months, we've actually had some pretty solid applicants, and we're starting to see good candidates come from different, more of those active channels, your job boards.
For sure.
So
that's nice.
There's a lot more people out there. It's fun, man. It's fun having lots more people to talk to.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if that answers your question, but,
yeah,
that's a trend we're definitely noticing.
More inbound applications, more quality inbound applications.
Yeah. And we also have more agencies wanting to grow and wanting to find producers.
Yeah, that's cool. So a lot of these agencies, like, what's the typical size that you're working with? Are these like 30, 50 person companies primarily, or what?
Yeah. There's even some that are 10 to 20.
So it's primarily
typically 30 to 50 that's a good average.
So it's like founder-led sales primarily, like the business.
Say that again. I didn't catch what you said.
I like founder-led sales. So it's like the business owner that's primarily doing the sales until they, right?
Yeah. That's definitely the smaller ones for sure.
Right.
And those are the ones, like, you know, going back to the first part of our conversation, those are the ones we're going to look for. You know, we might poach somebody off a competitor.
Right.
Or we might find somebody that's a lot more high level. With your 30 to 50, you've probably got at least 8 producers, 5 to 8.
Oh, cool. I guess they're all like sales driven organizations for the most part, right?
Yeah. So and keep in mind, Levitt Group, you know, we've got LGE here, Levitt Group Enterprises, that's carrying a lot of the back end. We employ all the accountants and the IT staff and HR. And so these agencies are, when you say 30 to 50, it's a lot of just, it's client support and sales.
Yeah. It's just all like revenue stuff. But yeah, that's, I see the value out there. Is this like, would this be considered not exactly a franchise?
No,
is there like a word for it? Like to explain this model? I don't know. I'm trying to think. Co-ownership. Yeah.
That's the word we throw around a lot, is co-ownership, partnering. It really is. These co-owners at these agencies,
right?
They're partnering with a corporation, Levitt Group Enterprises.
And, yeah,
it's a unique model, but man, it's
Well, yeah, I mean, it gives them like a much bigger chance of success and they can accelerate growth. So it's just like a decision like, okay, do we want to stay independent and learn all this stuff on our own? Or do we want to accelerate growth and have like a big, you know, a partner that can give us all these resources, which like, I definitely see the value out there. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Which is we give access to carriers and capital.
Yeah.
We had a gentleman in Alabama that had a big agency and we bought up 70% of it. And his goal was to take his now 30% and regrow it to what it was when he had 100%. And he's since done that several times over. So
what's the exit strategy look like? Do you guys have like right of first refusal where you buy it directly from the owner, or can they sell their stake to whoever they want? Like, how does that work?
No, co-ownership is not something we just throw around lightly. We want to make sure that this person is aligned with us, their values, their goals. And so typically we make that decision. We do make that decision together with our local partner.
Okay. For sure. Well, look, man, this has been a lot of fun. I feel like I've learned a lot about your space and the, you know, for our audience, like, you know, obviously there's a value of understanding the niche, but also there's a lot of crossover, right? Like hiring great salespeople is difficult across the board, regardless what industry you're in or what phase of growth you're in. It's difficult. So I know this has added a ton of value. We're coming up on time here. I just wanted to ask for anybody that wants to kind of follow you, engage with you online, how can they engage with you?
Yeah, LinkedIn. That's probably the best place to go find me. Brent Davis, Leva Group. So hit me up on LinkedIn, especially if you're a salesperson, man. If you're in a job that you feel like you could have a lot more for yourself, not just money, but time, and, you know, build some equity within your book. Hit me up, man. Let's talk. We've got agencies in, you know, almost 30 states. So we can probably find a home for you.
That sounds great. Well, Brent, thank you so much for coming on the show today, and for everybody tuning in, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
Hey, thanks, James.
Thank you for tuning in to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode and gained a lot of valuable insights to help guide your talent strategy. I also want to say thank you to my team at Secure Vision for making the show possible. Secure Vision is the number one embedded recruitment provider, and we are a 3-time category leader on G2. Secure Vision partners with over 150 companies to provide on-demand recruiters who specialize in either tech, revenue, or G&A. For more information, you can visit securevision.io. For more content, you can follow me on LinkedIn at James Mackey or on Twitter at James Mackey DMV. We've dropped links in the description. If you want to be on our show or have any topics you'd like for us to cover, reach out at breakthroughhiring.io. We really appreciate your support with reviews on Apple Podcasts. And lastly, make sure to tune in every Tuesday and Thursday for a new episode. See you next time.